Welcome to the very last lecture where we change the topic a little bit. Maybe before we get to the heart of the matter, I promised you last time that I will show you poster because I didn't have electronic version. So in the unlikely case somebody has not seen it or didn't have a time yet to see it being posted in its physical form, here is the electronic one. And most of the lectures are already briefly introduced last time, so practical semantics of programming languages based on Coq, the modal logic course by Daniel Gorin, which may be of interest, especially if you got interested in this temporal logic aspect, CTL, LTL, and the fixed point flavors. Our seminar on homotopy type theory, which is particularly useful or natural if you already have some background in either some proof assistant or some dependently typed programming language like Epigram, or you have seen some type theories, maybe dependently type, which I guess you have seen if you attended PROC, or you have some familiar with some somewhat higher mathematics. And if you're especially interested in formalizing mathematics in computers, but this is just one of similar in a way. And the lecture that I didn't announce properly last time is algebra programming, which is only taking place for the second time. Several years ago, it was done by Stefan Milius, and it was quite a popular lecture, and this time it's going to be done by Lutz Schroeder. And again, if you're interested in some more solid or more elegant mathematics behind all that, then that's a course you may be interested in. And as I said, probably from the point of view of this lecture, if you haven't attended SEMPROC, this is the most natural continuation or complement where you learn how to use not fully automated tool, but proof assistants when you and computer are developing proof together, so to say. So that was one thing. The other thing was evaluations. Thanks for so many people for returning the evaluation forms and for being reasonably kind on me. My absolutely favorite comment was that Framasi is hell. I don't know which one of you has written it. Is this a generally shared sentiment, by the way, that the Framasi is hell? Or it doesn't mean that we are going to kill it anyway. So as I maybe mentioned in the earlier edition, we're using different tools and it wasn't any better. So in the past, we were using tools like Daphne, and I think all the problems. So what were the worst problems you had when dealing with Framasi? Yes?
Then I had another loop invariant, and it no longer believed stuff which it believed before, and the whole business of Framasi not telling you anything about why it doesn't believe something, except for it's mostly invariant. Is it if they hold initially or if they after that? But that is very limited.
Yeah, so that's exactly the same problem that we had with Daphne, and the thing is that then you had to use artificial programming language, which was partially for research purposes, partially for teaching purposes, and in the end probably not doing any practical task. I mean, you could encode some standard algorithms like short weight algorithm. This was the huge triumph, but it's not that you would encode, you would write any industrial level code in that programming language per se. And this thing had invariance and precondition, postcondition, all the mechanism of assertion hardwired. So you had to write program in the way it was being verified, but you can imagine how hard it was even to get things to run. And all these problems that you needed somehow to permute conjunct or whatever, or throw some innocently looking assertion and things started to work or did not work anymore. This is something that you were struggling with all the time anyway. And actually, even today, we'll touch again on all the complications that are going on under the hood of this kind of tools. Well, Quite often they are based on SMT, but still deeper. You also very often, like in case of Skype, SAT solvers, and today we're actually going to learn how a bit, just a small peek, how complex this process into translating everything to a propositional formula that SAT solver can handle is. And then, of course, you need to use all kinds of crazy heuristics, which may break down very, very easily, and because this whole process of translating is rather not so transparent, then you don't know exactly what has gone wrong in the process or why the algorithm that was being used is created. You don't know which algorithm is being used, does not work anymore. So you would say that very fast has the advantage because it gives you explicit execution trace and because of all this symbolic. Yeah, it's a nice thing, and I only discovered it before last year's edition of the lecture. And the funny thing is that this is an academic tool, but actually it's properly polished, developed. You know, for 10 years they were just sitting on this, and this is by no means a rule in with academic tools, as you have probably seen as well. Right. Yeah, I don't know what else. Are there any other comments? I made a mistake actually not asking you individual questions because maybe. It would be useful to get some more detailed feedback. How does my profile linear looks like? So things that what I'm doing below the average, I'm not furthering the interest in term that I so well apparently. And the relationship between practice and research could be still better highlighted, you think? And judging from this. Okay, anyway, are there any questions, comments apart from what you have already put in the evaluation form? Well, you can always give them in private as well, or afterwards. But anyway, thanks again, especially that having more than 50% or more than 70% of people attending returning evaluation forms is by no means a rule. Exam dates, Daniel, you said that you'd like next week, and it seems that Christoph will be available, so we can do it. You have no constraints. Okay. And everybody else is fine with this week around 28 February 3rd of March. I don't remember exactly. This was the tentative date. We can arrange this by email later, so I can again set up a doodle and then double check with Christoph. But I think he's also available most of the week, and it will be early afternoons, I think, so several slots scattered across the whole week, and then you simply tell me what works for you. Okay. So, in this very last stretch, we are returning to model checking and temporal logic, and maybe now we have some wisdom and gray hair to look at it from a slightly different perspective. And today we want to consider, well, theoretical foundations of symbolic model checking, in particular something called banded model checking, which is, strictly speaking, a sub-area of symbolic model checking in general. So why do we care about those strange names and techniques, and why do we want to do something else than apart from what we have already covered? Well, in fact, these techniques are at the heart of new SMV or new XMV, and even more so the skate suit that Christoph is going to give you a very brief presentation on Friday. And actually, nobody of you is attending the practicum that our chair has on this, right? No, okay, so there is no overlap here. What it is all about? So, in brute force and standard model checking, where you just take our algorithms as presented during the lecture and also by Christoph during tutorials for LTL and in the lecture for CTL, FAN CTL, you would represent your model as an input with explicit states and transition relation. Typically, you take something like adjacency matrix, let's say. But then very soon you run into state explosion problem. And, well, I don't know to what extent you have seen how complex this can be. And perspective on model checking changed in mid-80s, where a certain brilliant PhD student at Carnegie Mellon came up with the idea of using symbolic representation of state transition diagrams in terms of special forms of ordinary Boolean formulas. So the whole business will be about moving from all these temporal logics. Well, today we'll focus just on LTL or existential fragment of CTL, which is pretty closely related, to just satisfaction for ordinary Boolean formulas. And what he proposed originally was known as binary decision diagrams or ordered binary decision diagrams. And he called the symbolic model checker based on this technique SMV. The name is not coincidental. Later it split into two different tools, one pursued in Berkeley, which was called Cadence SMV, and the other one was New SMV, the first version of the tool that we were using at the very beginning of this lecture or tutorials. Actually, while binary decision diagrams or ABDDs remain at the heart of new SMV, these days you can also do, if you choose so, abandoned model checking with newest tools like new XMV. This is not the only thing, but this is one of the options that it gives you as compared to the original setup. But this comes later. So what is the deal with those ABDDs? I will not discuss them in detail, but they are, well, you have already seen at least one tool based on that. And in fact, if you pick up a book discussing formal methods or model checking, like, for example, Hugh and Ryan book, which was to an extent used in preparing those lectures, that will gradually depart from it. This is the SAT solving, this is the satisfiability technique that they present. If you're interested, you can read up on this in chapter 6. So without going into details of this canonical representation of Boolean formulas, while they improve on what you can normally do with standard model checking, with standard representation of models in terms of sensi matrices, there is a form of state explosion that that can still get in your way. And also, this method relies, one of the things that you have to do whenever you apply this method is to find some manually, some ordering between propositional variables occurring in this diagram or in this canonical form of propositional formula. And well, you may be lucky or not with that. And the next breakthrough after the Macmillan's thesis came more than 10 years later, which was a paper by Biera, Simati, Clark, and Zhu on symbolic model checking without this BDDDs, which show how to encode, which was underlying on the kind of canonical forms and manual ordering of variables in those canonical forms, but using ordinary Boolean formulas and rely on powerful SAT solving techniques instead to handle model checking. And the advantages of their method that they are claiming is that it quickly finds counterexamples of minimal size using much less space than those of BDDs and without the need for manual ordering of variables. So what was the crucial insight allowing encoding of temporal formulas? Well, if you think about finite portion of path, prefix, finite sequences, finite sequence of states at its beginning, there can be, as we are living in finite model and actually in any model, only two basic situations that arise. If your prefix already encodes entire path, then it must contain a loop at some point, right? So you have a sequence of states, S1, S2, SL, SK minus 1, SK, and at some point you went back. And this means that this finite prefix stands already for entire path, right? And then you just have periodically repeating sequence of states like this. Or you may fail to have a loop yet. Well, if it's a path in non-terminating models, and we always assume them to be in a non-terminating model, and we always assume our models to be non-terminating, then sooner or later they will hit it, but perhaps you are still not far enough. And then they are not representing finite paths. So now we are going to take our old definition of satisfaction for LTL formulas and give something that we can call bounded semantics, splitting the satisfaction definition into two cases, when there is a loop and when there is no loop. In the second case, where there is no loop, we will tweak the satisfaction definition a little. Namely, when there is no loop yet in our prefix, it means that just looking at this prefix, we cannot judge any formula starting with G to be true, because in order to say that formula starting with always true is true, we will need to know what happens at all states. And if you are at the end of the prefix, you don't know what happens in the successor of this K. So at the very end, at SK, no formula starting that with X is true either. And some tweaks have to make to the definition of satisfaction for until and release as well. Whereas in the former case, you know what is the successor of our K, this is L. And in fact, the satisfaction definition that you're going to use will be ordinary satisfaction definition for LTL. Just to make sure that everything works, we need to restrict to attention to formulas in negation normal form, because in this first case, in the second case, without a loop, you're going to make less formulas true, and we want to true that we want to make sure that bounded semantics is more restrictive than ordinary semantics. So first, let us recall how, because it's been already quite a while ago, right? Definition of satisfaction for LTL formulas. Bam, 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 bam. Because we are in negation normal form, I cannot do what I was doing in October and November and say, oh, I gave you U and gave you X, and then you can recover all the other connectives from that. Now negation can appear only in front of propositional atoms, so we only have literals. So I need to explicitly recall how satisfaction definition look like for each of these connectives. Somewhere in the past, everywhere in the past, until, and release. Do you still remember them? Well, not quite. Well, somewhere in the past, somewhere in the future, sorry, I said past. Somewhere in the future is obvious. Everywhere in the future is obvious too. Until, well, phi has to hold until psi appears. So there is a point where psi holds, and everywhere before, but not at this very end. So at points with indices smaller than n, we have that phi holds. Release, if you recall, was the dual of until, so it was like not until not. And these two formulas will kind of flip. And also this important strong inequality is weakened in definition. So how we could read it is that phi releases psi, which means if phi shows up at some point, at some n, and everywhere up to and including that point psi hold, then fine. And if phi never shows up to release psi, then psi has no choice but has to go on forever. So you see what we'll have to be careful about when talking, when looking at semantics in terms of this finite prefixes. For example, this clause, as I said, also G is problematic, and also when you are moving along the path, you have to be careful if you didn't reach the point yet where you can, if you reach the end of the prefix, but it's not the point where you can loop back. So just to have less of a mouthful to say, from now on we will call a path a k-loop, if it's, well, a loop with k elements. Straightforward enough. And now we define something which we will call k-semantics for formulas, where we prefix this k to the satisfaction symbol. And as I said, we split into two cases. If pi happens to be already a k-loop, so if it's of this form, then the satisfaction definition for an LTL formula is exactly what you have seen before. Otherwise, we are introducing now new symbol, where you have not only underscore, but also superscript, underscore k, but also superscript I. And now I'm going to define what it is, formalizing the intuition of idea or ideas suggested in the previous slide. So this is this case. And no loop. So how does this definition look like? Well, for propositional variables and for literals, notice that now I'm moving along along this path, so I'm not just defining everything in terms of paths and a chop of versions, but I'm actually looking at what is happening at the ith index, or sorry, not paths, prefixes of the row. So this I is something between this one and k. The clauses for conjunction and disjunctions are what you would expect. And this is formal definition capturing this fact that we are here in this bottom case, that if you are earlier than k, then you can just look at the next state, and here everything prefixed with x has to be false. Similarly for f, well, for f, actually, it's standard. It's just that the only future states that you are seeing in order to make your formula true are those up to and including k. It is never the case, as I said, that and in this semantics that phi g phi is true for any phi. And as for until, again, we can only look at points in the future up to k. Then this is standard definition. For release, now the satisfaction definition for release is almost the same as for until, with the only difference that we flipped phi and psi. And replaced here the strong inequality with weak inequality, because the other case that where psi can hold everywhere is cannot be tested if you're looking only at finite prefix. So now this is simply more restrictive satisfaction definition. And this is also where we were insisting on working in some negation normal form, either a conjunctive or disjunctive, whatever we prefer. Because now we can state as a theorem that for any model, for any k, any path pi and formula in negation normal form, we have that, I messed up the notation here. So this should be read as ordinary satisfaction definition if we are dealing with K-loop, and as one K when we are dealing with the case with no loop, when our path did not start looping after k many steps. And this works because we don't have involutive negation. So even though we change or restricted satisfaction clause in such a way that in one subcase of this semantics, less complex formulas can be made true. Conjunction, disjunction, G, F, X, U are monotone, and we don't have anything like implication negation, which could possibly flip this upside down and create a problem. So having more restrictive satisfaction definition means simply that it's harder to be true, but it works in one direction. But there is also opposite direction, namely, we can show that for any finite model, this will not be true, of course, if we have infinite models. Any path and any monotone formula in disjunction normal form or conjunction normal form in general, negation normal form, we have that being satisfied in ordinary sense by our path implies that there exists k such that phi is satisfied in this restricted sense. Why? Well, because any infinite path in a finite model at some point has to enter the loop. So at some point we will hit the ordinary satisfaction definition when k is big enough to make pi a k loop. In order to find a concrete bound on this k, of course, we need to resort to some of this previously discussed model checking algorithms. But as long as we are not beginning to properly investigate complexity of what is going on, this extremely basic argument ensures that this theorem holds. So far everything clear? I mean, this is rather trivial. The only point is that we want to use now these two separate these two subcases of satisfaction definition to define, as I said, encoding of our temporal formulas in by means of complicated propositional formula with different kind of items. So how do we go about it? The notion of K satisfiability is encoded in ordinary propositional calculus in the following way. If you give me a model with some concretely defined transition relation, we will soon investigate how this transition relation is being defined. And you distinguish some state S1, let's say initial state, and a formula. I will create a, using these three arguments or parameters, a formula of ordinary Boolean logic, classical propositional logic with special kind of atoms, such that this formula is satisfiable in the sense of CPC satisfiability, satisfiability for classical propositional calculus, if our original phi we started with is satisfied at some path, k satisfied, at some path starting from our initial state, S1. Combined with the observation from the preceding slide that ordinary satisfaction for a given fixed path implies existence of suitable k for which this more restrictive satisfaction definition works as well, we can establish that there is a witnessing path from a given initial state if for some k this large propositional formula in three parameters is satisfiable as formulas in propositional calculus. And still further, using the fact that if you have explicit path quantifiers and explicit negation, you can flip things, and LTL satisfaction definition was defined, can be seen as a special case of CTL satisfaction definition with universal path quantifier. If we, of course, rewrite again, if we insist on everything being the negation normal form, so this thing here means that I want to push negation through all the conjunction, disjunction of this formula. If I, it's okay. It's if this is phi, but here I'm saying that this is unsatisfiable for all k. This is the plan that we want to follow. I didn't give you an idea yet how this thing is going to look like. This is some kind of black box with three holes, and I know this is just what we want ultimately to obtain. Of course, this would mean that in order to reduce LTL satisfiability to propositional satisfiability, we would need to consider like this dirty checking that I, dirty cheating that I did when talking about horror, assertion algebra for logic, writing infinite conjunction and disjunctions, that I would need to write infinite disjunction over all k's of these guys. But in fact, and there is not much additional reasoning one needs to show, this k is always bound by the diameter of our model M. What is the diameter of a model M? This is the longest of shortest possible distances that you have in it. So the distance, you can define the distance between two points by shortest path that exists behind them. For simplicity, we can restrict attention to connected models, so there are no two points for which this distance will be infinity. And then the diameter is the maximum of that. Why I want to talk about diameter rather than the CP size of M, which would also work, of course. Disjunction over, we're taking disjunction up to K being equal cardinality of M is obviously enough. But this is not as good upper bound as it may seem. I mean, it looks very nice, it is linear, and this is how we were thinking about it so far, if our models are just black boxes, points with some labeling. But are our states really this, if you recall what was going on with when you were modeling things in USMB? These structures had some, these states had some structure, right? states were always vectors of state variables. So typically when you were modeling something with some V or solving one of Christoph's house of Gabber, you could see that the size of your model could grow pretty fast because this is how it could look like, right? At the very beginning, you would write that you have these variables. This was, of course, for this wall of code and cabbage problem. And then what were our states? Well, the states is a tuple of this form where this guy, this guy, this guy, and this guy is a Boolean. And this is taking one of those four values. Right? So you can easily compute how many such possible states we have exponentially in suitable multiplicity of two, let's say. And of course, the more states you have, the quicker your the exponential with all those states model blows up exponentially. But it's actually a useful observation to have. We actually want to have some insight in the structure of our states in order to define encoding that I want to talk about. And to simplify it even further, in that particular house of Gabber, if you still remember it, and in general, in new SMV, you could have, let's say, enumerated types, so your variables did not have to be just Booleans. It could take, I don't know, numbers of days in month, or week, or whatever. But in principle, you could always bring everything down to Boolean variables, adding suitably many additional constraints saying that only some configurations of those bits are allowed. So let's just not even mess up with it. Let's forget for timing all this curry and remember that when rendering on encoding our particular model for this house of Gabber, we would need also somehow to encode it using some additional bits. So let's just look at those four Booleans, Ferryman, Wolf, Gold, and Cabbage. Now, what is our labeling? Because you remember that when we started talking about LTL and temporal logic, our models were of this form. And labeling was assigning to any state a set of atoms. So now we can flip our perspective a little bit. What was labeling doing is really saying which state variable holds in a given state. And from this point of view, a state, if it's just a finite vector of such Boolean state variables, each state is completely determined by its labeling, by the set of Boolean variables which hold in it. So if you fix this ordering, Ferryman is the first variable, Wolf is the second variable, Goat is the third, and Cabbage is fourth, then the particular state, the particular labeling which says that at a given state, Ferryman is true, Wolf is false, Goat is true, and Cabbage is false, is just this quadruple of particular quadruple of Booleans. So let's even forget about those concrete names that we gave to those Boolean variables. We can now see each state as being of the form S1 to Sn, when n is the number of our Boolean variables. And labeling is some subsets of numbers from 1 to n, exactly those which are true at a given state. So we identified atoms with just coordinate numbers. This is all bureaucracy, but we want to have concrete grip how, what are the building blocks from which we're going to start to construct our propositional formulas. And also, how did we define our transition relation? Actually, I should have also put this on the slide, I forgot. All right, it's here. Well, it's elevator house of Gabber. Well, we're also fixing some initial state. And then we were defining transition relation using this assign, next, and so on and so on. So, somewhat more abstractly, sorry, that's not the right one. We could say that the transition relation is defined by, well, let's say disjunction norma from disjunction of conjunctions of inequalities like this, saying that the first coordinate or the first label of S is equal to, so for example, ferry, the Boolean value of ferry in the predecessor state is equal to the Boolean, what was the other? Yeah, of the ferryman is equal to the value of wolf in the second state. This has nothing to do, of course, with how this relation was defined in that concrete house of Gabber. It's just an example. And the value of, what was it? If God was true in the ancestor, in the predecessor state, then God is false in the successor state, and also wolf being true in the predecessor state, the logical value of wolf in the predecessor state is the same as the logical value of cabbage in the successor state. This is the kind of definitions that you were giving, right, when you were explaining how transition relation between state looks like. So from now on, we will write this formula as Tm of S as prime, where we understand this S as n prime, not to be indecomposable atoms, but rather vectors of this form. And this is what is normally called transition predicate. So we have those meta variables S and S prime ranging over vectors. And now when we are given any k supposed to be length of our path, we are fixing S1, Sk to be sequence of such meta variables, each one of them with, I should have written here, of course, S1, S4, or S1 prime to S prime n. So this should be this n, and this 4 should be equal. I will fix this type later. And then, as our atoms are defined with coordinates or coordinate numbers, we can now write atom on a given state variable as, sorry, I should not say state variable, meta variable as that particular state has value top on this on the coordinate denoted by this atom. So these are the types of propositional atoms that we have now, right? Equalities between projections of variables, or equalities between projections of variables and Boolean constants. And recall that we wanted to define this black box or black hole with three inputs or three parameters. we now see how to define what should probably first conjunct of something much longer, namely how to say that we have that this S superscript 1 to S superscript k, oh, sorry, there is a comma missing here as well, represent a path in our model, namely by writing this long conjunction of those transition predicates where we keep varying not this atom labeling subscript, but a superscript which we use to move along the path. This is how we begin. Now we need to encode somehow our bounded semantics. In this part of our formula to be defined, concrete transition predicate of stemming from a given model will not play any role. This would be defined uniformly. The only important thing is k and, of course, propositional atoms appearing in our original file. So this was, if you recall, this loopless variant of k semantics, something I'm just repeating a slide that I show you 10 or 15 minutes ago. Now I can just flip my fingers and turn each of these satisfaction clauses into a propositional formula. Let's go step by step. So this is SI subscript P equal to top. And well, this is not equal to top or equal to bottom. Then we define conjunction and disjunction of the I position of the loopless case of K semantics in the way they should be defined. For the formula X, we just move one variable, or one vector meta variable forward if there is still some place to move forward. Otherwise, we replace just this thing with bottom. For F, through somewhere in the future, remember that we are here now in the bottom loopless case. So the only way we can make this true starting from a given I is if phi was true here, phi was true here, phi was true here, phi was true here. But in the loopless case of case semantics, there is no duality between F and G. So the subformulas beginning with always true are replaced uniformly with false, constant. For until, well, until holds if phi holds everywhere up to, but not including some point j up in the future, and at j we have psi. So we just move the subscript here. And similarly for release, remember that again, in the case for release, in the case for release in bounded semantics, this or phi is true. Oh God, sorry, this is a typo. This should have been, of course, psi. this will be fixed as well. So this is the satisfaction clause encoded by this propositional formula. Okay, we have something which can be possibly used as another subformula. We don't know exactly where in this huge black box formula and parametric and our model M, our formula phi and our K. But we will also need some other subformula taking case, possibly a much more complicated subformula than taking case of this. So, as an intermediate step in encoding this K loop, we will not do it for all possible K loops, but for something that we may call KL loop, where L is some integer smaller or equal to K. This is what the KL loop is, where we know exactly. So this is another piece of information that we get, to which point we have to return back from K. Then this point, what was confusing all the time is that in the slides I was using superscripts for those guys. And here I wrote subscripts, and only one of those things can be appropriate. So remember that when I write subscript rather than superscript, I will meet a particular coordinate, a value of a fixed, of a given Boolean variable in my state. And each state is vector of such variables. So then we know that successor relation, so it's not exactly plus one modulo k, because we're not coming back to one. When we reach k, the successor state is L rather than one. Of course, when I only tell you that a loop, a path is a k loop, then one will need to guess which L it is. So ultimately, when writing down our large formula, we will need to provide a disjunction of encodings of KL loops for each L smaller than or equal to K. So, well, this is what it is. Let's go step by step. This is probably longest and most messy slide. These things are hopefully clear enough. They are exactly the same for the loop case as there were for a loopless case. Is the notation clear? So now this L, smaller than K, this concrete L to which we are looping back to, is written before semantic bracket. This thing is the point, or rather vector meta variable that we are in right now, and K is the endpoint where the path loops in all these things. And I marked in red on this slide places where the loop satisfaction definition differs from loopless case. So recall that before for the loopless case, this was the same thing when we were dealing with a strictly smaller than k, but it was bottom where I was equal to k. Now when I is equal to k, this thing is that very L That's clear enough. How do we talk about something being possibly true in future, but not knowing exactly when? So this was this junction of all those guys here in the loopless case. But now it may happen that we are here, right? So if we want to check the validity of phi for I like this, then we need to check, of course, just like before, in the validity of all the points between I and K. But we also need to look back if we are already behind the point where our path looped. And this is why here you have this minimum. And of course, now the duality between F and J is restored. Again, here I have something very similar with this minimum in the subscript, in the limit, on the starting point. So if I want to check if G phi is true here, I have to check if phi is true here, 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 but also I may have to go back. The only difference is simply that I write this conjunction rather than this junction. This is all absolutely clear, right? Nothing to misunderstand. And until, well, notice that I have no longer this junction here. First disjunct, or rather, first disjunct of disjunct is again the same as in the loopless case. But now it may happen that in order to find a point in my future, I actually needed to go to my past. If I am behind that L where our path already looped. And this is what this long thing in red is encoding here. So I'm now first saying what I used to say before, and now I also want to say that, because I want to say that phi is true until psi, so phi 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 psi here. Maybe I need to draw it again. And here I want to have now phi until psi. And this is where psi holds, in fact. So I need to say that phi is through here, phi is through here, phi is through here, phi is through here, phi is through here. This is what this thing is saying. And my J here is, may happen to be the witnessing point where psi finally holds, might be here. So I need to say explicitly that psi holds here. And in all the points from here to here, when I move to the past, phi, 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 holds. Right? This is clear. What's going on? So if I unravel this, I will get the normal picture when, well, then I need to have yet another subscript or power when to denote repetitions of those states, right? So this path unraveled will be of the form S1, S2, SL. Ah, this should have been more clearly written as I. This is what is confusing here. SK, then I have SL1. Sorry, this is quite horrible, but what I can do. SI1, SK1, SL2, SI2, SK2, and so on and so on, right? So this situation here is when we had to get past the first occurrence of K in this unraveling, and this was another copy of J already. And here, everywhere, phi had to be true and psi is witnessed here. Is this all clear? And release now is a proper dual of Antil, but paradoxically, of course, it looks less symmetric. So this is this new conjunct that we needed to add to take care of the fact that phi release psi may be also true if phi does not show up anywhere, but psi is true everywhere inside the infinity periodic part of the path. And of course, everywhere else, the roles of psi and phi are switched between until and release. And I mark this in green. Here you have this strict inequality from the definition of until, replaced by the weak inequality in the definition of release. Is this clear? This is the most important slide, so we can spend arbitrarily long on just this. Shall I draw more pictures? Just let me know. I can do anything you ask me to. If you want to double check if there is a typo somewhere, or if some notation is still not clear because there are too many of those superscript and subscript jumping around. Is it clear how this definition, I didn't put the ordinary satisfaction definition to have quick comparison between the two. How this propositional encoding with this very special kind of atoms, that projection of SI to P coordinate is equal to top or equal to false, is encoding the K loop for a KL loop for a fixed K and fixed L. Assuming that our so if we assume that our sequence of vector metavariable represents this path of this very specific form, which has exactly K points and it loops from K to L. We didn't say that yet, right? So we will probably need to use somehow our transition predicate to encode this very fact that we have KL path. This is not built in here. This is just the part of this formula which encodes the satisfaction definition, assuming that we are in the right situation. So just to finish this off, we have now a family of those formulas. If we now start to vary this L, because notice that this L was kept fixed everywhere, the only thing that, and K2 in fact, the only thing that was changing somewhere was this superscript on the right. So now if we fix the superscript on the right, so if we fixed this vector meta variable saying that we are staying at the beginning of the path, and instead keep varying DL, meaning that we may have looped here, or we may have looped here, or we may have looped here, or we may have looped here. We should probably apply each time some different disjunct of some complicated subformula of our ultimate holy grail that we want to obtain. Grail, holy grail with three holes. And also it's clear that each of these disjuncts, so each, when we keep varying this L, we get a different disjunct of some subformula of this guy each time, should also, well, claim or say, the state should not be understood like state in state, this is verb. So it should proclaim that K loops back precisely to L rather than some other L prime, prime to smaller than K. But we know how to do it, right? We have now this notion of transition predicate. So we simply use this, this transition predicate to create yet another subformula of our intended goal, which will say that you can go from K back to L. And recall again that this thing was the disjunction DNF of inequalities saying, let's say, cabbage of the first is equal to wolf of the second, ferryman falls in the predecessor is equal to means that goat falls in the successor, this kind of thing. And then we can also say how this sequence of path meta variables or functions with finitely many arguments, as many arguments as we have ordinary Boolean variables in our setup, is representing a path by taking a disjunction of all those L's. So you're saying that I can loop back from K to 1, from SK to S1, or maybe I can loop back from SK to S2, or maybe I can loop back from SK to S3, and so on and so on. And this will be the loop transition predicate. So in the end, this is how my formula is going to look like. Remember, this thing was just conjunction of TM SI to SI plus 1 from I equal 1 to okay, minus 1. This thing was saying, and sorry, I made a mistake, of course. There should be a bracket here, and there should be a disjunction. So, what I, too many typos today again. Sorry for this. Maybe let me write in the blackboard and I will fix it immediately after the lecture, because this is the most important formula I wanted to show today. Which, if you recall, was T S1, TM S1, S2, and T S2, S3, and T SK minus 1, SK. And now there should be a large bracket around here, and this thing turns into disjunction. not LMK, meaning I am not a K-loop. So we remember there were two inductive definitions of propositional formulas. This was the first one without this L here, which was encoding the bottom case. Phi is or maybe phi holds in loopless semantics at the beginning of the path. S1 SK, so this is the bracket that should be here and it's not, and this is disjunction, which should replace the disjunction. And then, well, the rest, fortunately, hopefully, as on the slide. Or we are in KL loop case for some L smaller or equal to K. Meaning, I am a KL loop, and formula phi holds in K loop semantics at the beginning of S1 SK. And then the blue closing bracket, one bracket missing here. That's how it should look like. Sorry, it will be fixed. Is it clear what is happening? So this would be rather long propositional formula, as you can imagine. And remember that while we here already range over L, aha, I erased all the KL loop pictures, we still keep K fixed. So remember that ultimately, in order to encode our original LTL formula and in standard satisfaction definition, we need to also to form a disjunction of these guys over k up to suitably large one, which, if you are very brutal, you would make the entire size of M, but as you see, it can get very nicely exponential. Or if you want to fine grain it a little bit, bounded by something slightly better, like diameter of the model. But then be careful, because sometimes nice lower bound, smaller than the size of M, this exponent of the number of all the variables you have, may require a complicated formula to encode the property that a given number k is diameter or something still better of a given model, like quantified Boolean formula, whatever. So that may be the price, and one needs to fine grain it, tailor it a little bit each time. That's how it is done. This is what sometimes or quite often happens in the background. Recall again, this is a propositional formula with atoms of this special form, projection of the I-th guy on the p-coordinate. Actually, I should have written here some just I plus 1 or what. To the p-coordinate is equal to q-coordinate or negation thereof. Or if you're encoding the ordinary propositional atoms, projection of a given si to p is true. And negation thereof, of course, because we have literals, not just atoms. And recall now what were the theorems that we want to establish, and they clearly hold. So if we have a model with a distinguished state S1 and a formula phi, we have that. And the fixed, I forgot about this fixed k here. We have that there exists a path which satisfies phi under this k semantics if this formula constructed for a fixed k is satisfiable. Satisfiability, as I said, in ordinary sense is equivalent to satisfiability for some k, and unsatisfiability. Or rather, satisfiability of universally quantified path formula, so in the LTL sense, is unsatisfiability for all k. This is just a reminder of what it was supposed to be. Good. And I'm repeating now on the slides what I already said to you, that we can choose suitably large k. One more thing that we should have noticed from complexity point of view, because we want this encoding to be reasonably small if m and k are fixed and phi is taken as a parameter. And for this, one needs to encode shared common subformulas using additional variables for subformulas of phi. So what can be done with this guy now? Well, there are some very powerful SAT solving techniques, in particular something called Stahlmark's algorithm, which is patented. Funny enough, you would think that all that one can do with those propositional formulas that you see at GLOIN is do some kind of resolution or evaluate everything to top and bottom, or maybe get a bit smarter. But now you see that these things can be like thousands of or millions of propositional variables long. It can be very messy, conjunction of disjunction of negations and whatnot. And checking very quickly whether it holds or not is extremely desirable ability. And every improvement, trivial as it may see when you're dealing with kind of formulas that you can write in one or two lines on breadboard, now it can have very dramatic industrial consequences. In particular, what was his name? Winter Stalmark? I forgot. Scandinavic something name. The author of this algorithm was able to start a company called Prover Technologies, and this is in fact the engine behind the tool that whose quick presentation or a tour Christoph will give you on Friday. Of course, that itself will not be enough, having just a smart SAT solving thing. So even if you look at the engine itself, there are more things happening. In particular, a technique called K-induction, which is a technique for checking validity of formulas prefixed with G, so everywhere on the path, where you do induction along this transition predicate that you have seen. It's not complete, it is not always infallible, and it's extended with various heuristics that I'm not talking about. And this is just what is happening in the background. What you will see on the surface will be tool which you can, where you can design your models using lots of mouse drags and clicks and so on and so on. And this one of the reasons why it has to be visual and not deal with any kind of temporal formulas is that engineers do not like temporal logic, and actually quite often you simply don't have people at hand who are comfortable working with this kind of thing. But people can in general use tools which are more resembling industrial applications, and then the model generated in this way and the specification that it's somehow described is directly translated to propositional formula, not even necessarily now going through LTL, because there is no LTL or CTL input to begin with, and then handled using suitable SAT solving algorithms with additional heuristics. Stalmark's algorithm, while probably the most commercially beneficial, if you are Stalmark himself and you are CEO of this company, Prover Technologies, is fortunately not the only thing available. So if you want to implement your own tool and even use it on the market, there are much older algorithms for SAT solving. If we had one more lecture, we would try to have a look at least one of them, either Stalmark algorithm, because I cannot write a tool and sell it to people and earn money in this way, I can, of course, this is still a piece of mathematics, so I can describe the algorithm itself. And there are, of course, no restrictions also on commercial use, on at least as far as I know, of this old self-solving algorithm from 1962, Davis Putnam, Longman, Loveland. So that's it. I mean, sometimes you don't need fancy formalisms under the hood, like separation logic, temporal logics, and so on. Somehow, sometimes, in fact, being able to handle good old propositional formulas that you know from Gloin is the key to success. That was the additional story that I wanted to give you today. I don't know, are there any questions? Well, if not, then you will see something more concrete on Friday, and we will see each other during the exam. Thanks for staying with me until the very end, and good luck.